Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. Today is June 27th, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here. I'm in Eugene, Oregon, and I want to thank you for joining our show and for sharing our station and letting your friends know that they can find us on TuneIn Radio or live here on our radio station where you're probably listening right now. You can also find us on YouTube. On UCY TV, they have a playlist and look for us. I want to thank you, but I also want to put a shout out to Jules, our producer, and give her all of our blessings. She had a medical emergency yesterday that has kept her from the radio station. And frankly, our hearts are with you, Jules, and hopefully you'll be back soon. And let's just proceed so things will go smoothly today for you. This morning we have with us Heidi Lambert, who, as you know, was a child who grew up around Hanford, has lots of experience, understands it, and frankly, kind of has a scientific mind and can talk to us about all of that chemical, nuclear stuff that, frankly, us non-scientific people barely, we act like we understand it, but what we really know is that it's harmful. So thanks, Heidi, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And just to clarify, I'm not a scientist, but I am a nerd. And I've lived with scientists my whole life. And growing up at Hanford, you have to kind of have a grasp on science, or otherwise they just don't talk to you about it and they think that you don't understand. So I've spent a lot of my life trying to understand the chemistry and the physics behind nukes.
That's an interesting statement. I mean, a lot of people living in Hanford are basically pretty science literate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So Hanford was a farmland. The most of the people who are residents there were farmers or cattle ranchers, dry wheat farmers. And they came in and then they started to immigrate there around the 1920s. But it wasn't really until Hanford came in the 40s and started putting in irrigation systems and electricity for air conditioning and the heat that it actually made that environment livable. And so in the 1950s, we saw a huge flux of people coming to the Tri-Cities area in eastern Washington. It started with the Manhattan Project, which was very top secret. So there was just a handful of scientists involved in that, but there was a lot of construction workers, a lot of road workers, a lot of plumbers who were needed to build the site. And so they would house them in Richland or Kennewick, which is about 10 miles away from Hanford. And you call it Hanford. There was actually a town of Hanford, but the Hanford Reservation is where the waste was all going in all of the experiments from the Manhattan Project. They thought this was a wasted desert that was useless. And so they buried a lot of this waste. I want to say 56 million gallons of waste is there now, and miles of just radioactive products like trains and buses and all of that stuff they've just buried there. And now we're looking, you know, 80 years later. And in that 80 years, the science has evolved to understand so much more about what is happening with those things.
So
as I grew up in Tracy, there is more and more, a lot of military veterans were offered jobs there. And a lot of schools gave veterans educations in nuclear science, and they would bring them to Eastern Washington. In the 80s, it changed to a lot of medical professions came to the Tri-Cities to study. Like if you wanted to be an X-ray technician, it was one of the best schools to study at. Chemotherapy, anything that uses radiation for medicine was being experimented on in Eastern Washington. So you had a range of doctors from all kinds of genres of scientists, and they moved there. They got paid very, very well. They lived in really big houses. And then after about 4 or 5 years, they were done and they moved away either back home or somewhere else or to another site. So it was a lot of transient.
You know what's interesting about that? None of those people's medical conditions were tracked. None of their children's medical conditions were tracked. None.
Well, so I think that was on purpose, personally. Yeah. I think that that was on purpose. And I wanted to talk a little bit today about lead, because that's something that's really come into my awareness in the last few months.
Okay.
The last time I
Let's
was
do. I know lead is everywhere. About. Here in Eugene, schools have been tested with high levels of lead that they're having to work on. And I know that's the scenario for many, many cities in our country right now.
Yeah, because it was common, and it's been used, hundreds of years we've used lead.
In different ways, in many industries.
In many ways, yeah, and one of the leading ways was with water. So, like, we lined our pots with lead, we did our pipes with lead. It's cheap, it's easy, it's malleable. And the thing that... the hardest lesson, I guess, for me to understand was that we knew lead was poisonous really right away. When you have a high amount of lead in your body, you go crazy and you act insane, and you can't have a memory loss, so you can't learn. We knew that as humans, we knew lead was very dangerous. But because we lived in such a slave society, we didn't care, because the lower people or the people who have less concern were the miners and the people to get the lead and work with the lead. And so we thought the trace amounts wouldn't hurt us. And it has gone through decades where we've started to realize, I mean, it really wasn't until the 1970s that we really started to question it. And I think it's really interesting also because there is a scientist who led his whole life. His name was Claire Patterson, and he's the gentleman I've been reading about lately. He worked in Oak Ridge, which was like a sister site to Hanford, but it was on the East Coast, I believe in North Carolina or South Carolina. But Claire Patterson, he was actually a geologist, and he was trying to determine the age of the world. And to do that, he was working with uranium. In Oak Ridge, they were actually doing what they call lead studies. And so he would study lead there and the decay of lead so that he could properly age the earth. And it's so weird to me. I mean, that was in the 70s. So it's not that long ago. 40 years ago is when the gentleman actually proved how old the earth was. But what my whole point is that he was working with uranium, and he was learning that uranium had 13 stages from uranium to lead. And so this really...
Wait. I want us to back up a bit here, because I was waiting to let you know that Oak Ridge is in Tennessee, by the way.
But, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I knew it was one of those states over there. Yeah. I knew, yes.
But Oak Ridge, back up, what did you say? He learned that it could break down, what did you say? How many ways?
Uranium. So he worked with uranium, which is a natural element. And he saw that there was 13 stages. That element, uranium, breaks into 13 other elements.
Ironic. 13, the unlucky number, of course.
I know, isn't it? It is strange. But the last stage is lead. And these things kind of, these are leaving these weird memories.
Okay, so can I back up a little bit? So when they're saying, oh, this product, it breaks down in 2 weeks, or this product breaks down in a week, and this one lasts for 2 years, and this one lasts for 20 years, and then it ultimately breaks down. What they're saying is it breaks down into lead.
Yeah.
It doesn't just break down.
That's your final product.
It's the final, it turns into a product. It doesn't just go back into dirt.
Right. Well, lead is a type of dirt. Sort of.
Yeah, but see, do you get what I'm saying? Like, the way that this has been framed, do you get the language? This is why people think it's not that important. It has a lot. It goes, don't worry, it dissipates. It turns in. What you're essentially saying here, Heidi, is that lead is the byproduct of uranium. And the reason we have so much lead in our water is because we have all this uranium.
Right. That is what I'm saying.
That's actually that's a huge conversation shift. Do you understand what I meant earlier when I think I talked to you a few weeks ago about us becoming the policy entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
Let's just talk about this publicly, because we have to start framing this differently. You guys want to stop the lead in our water? Because everyone wants lead out of the water. Oh, yeah.
We want lead out of our air, out of our water, out of our dirt.
It's everywhere.
Right. Right. And forever it was in our gasoline. And that's the thing, is that they knew they had this byproduct and they didn't know what to do with it. So they started adding it to gasoline, seeing that it made our cars more efficient. And so we started using it. Well, then it started spreading even more widespread lead. And it was in the 70s where there was actually a scientist. It's like the first scientist. I'm trying to find his name. Robert, I want to say Laus, maybe. He was the first scientist to ever use scientific amounts to use them against. So essentially, he lied. He lied about the dangers, seeing that the amounts were safe. So he was the first scientist doctor to start talking about scientific amounts. And he actually started using a word called occupational hazard. So he was the one who started actually saying, you know, oh, well, like we leaded gas, there's no proof that that's dangerous to humans, but leaded gas is. So, I mean, all of this like greenhouse effect, all of
these
lies.
Could you repeat that phrase again, that he was the first one to start talking about what?
Scientific amounts and an occupational hazard. And his name was Robert, I want to say Laus or Lease. And he, the spectrometer in the 1970s, say there was nothing dangerous about lead, that lead was not toxic, that it was fine in these trace amounts.
Wow.
And so I know that you're suspicious as I am when you hear trace amounts and safe amounts and occupational, you know, amounts, you know, that to me just like raises the hairs on my back of my neck, because I know that that's a language that they use for workers, for people who are working in those environments. And if we continue the slave kind of economy that we've had for hundreds of years, I mean, that's still very existent in Hanford. There's a lot of construction people and workers who have to go to work to feed their families. And so they go to this job believing that they are being kept safe and that they're within an occupational limit. But you and I both know there is no safe limit. And that's the same with lead. There's no safe limit of lead. And depending on your own personal genetics is how that will work its way in and maybe out, or maybe not out.
That's an interesting thing. I didn't realize there wasn't a safe limit. See, I bought that whole, you're talking to a brainwashed American. So are you talking about Matthew or Fila?
That's not the name that I have.
Okay,
I
I'm going to keep looking. Okay.
Yeah, but are you looking about Scientists for Lead in the 1966?
Oh, no. Okay.
When you
thanks.
Google.
No, but, I'll put that date in.
But my point is that this was only in the late 60s and early 70s.
Oh, wow.
And essentially, Claire Patterson, what he did was he started looking at the ocean water, and he noticed that the shallow water was very high concentrates of lead. In the deep water, there was none, and he started studying ice. And so that was how he was proving that we have put more and more lead into our atmosphere. And he went after the gas companies, and he said, you know, get the lead. You know, he didn't even, this is still in the 60s when most of the radiation and atomic energy was kept very top secret, so he didn't even really get a chance to look at how many bombs we would let off above ground and under the ocean by then, because by then I think it was like 200 bombs we had let off. So of course those added to the contaminants in our atmosphere. So but his focus was on leaded fuel. But that those kinds of scientists in those studies that are just, they're still not known. They're still not well known. And we're still listening to the scientists who are telling us that everything is okay and everything's safe. And because it's invisible and it's so, you know, micro, so an atomic change, it's not easy to see, and it takes a long time to turn to lead, like, say, 30, 40 years.
No way. So that this lead that we have now in our system is coming from the atomic bombing, essentially.
Most likely, yeah. Most likely.
This is why there's zero. You know what? Actually, that makes complete sense now. Now I understand why they're 100% silent about Fukushima.
Well, it's definitely...
Because if you start acknowledging that Fukushima is going to cause harm and is damaging the ocean, if anybody even says yes to that, then how long is it going to take before people like us, ordinary citizens, start realizing that the atomic age left residue that is now poisoning our water in the form of lead?
Well, yeah, it's poisoning our water and our earth, and it. The reason why lead is so scary is that it mimics other minerals. So, and that's the same with almost all of the radiation elements. They mimic true minerals. So, like, let's say you're growing potatoes, and those potatoes are going to be really absorbent of potassium. They're going to find any mineral in the ground that acts like a potassium. So it could be cesium. And it's going to absorb that. But the problem is that the atomic mineral doesn't act as the true mineral. Like, it's not a nutrient. So you're not, so that's like with our bodies are absorbing all this lead, thinking that it's zinc or potassium or calcium, but then it gets in our body and lodges in that cell. And the cell says, okay, well, your job is to give me this element, and it doesn't have it in there. And so that cell's deficient. And so then it mutates. And then that mutates. Then that mutates. Then that mutates. And it's really interesting in our bodies, you really don't even notice it. Usually it stays pretty low key until you get an injury. And so if you break a bone and you need a bunch of calcium in your body to fix that bone, your body will send every cell in your body that's supposed to be rich with calcium and all the things that you need to build strong bones. So all of those cells go to your bone. Well, maybe half of them are contaminated. And so then that's where the cancer will start, because those like bunk atoms are really turning to lead. And so then your cells, in a sense, are turning to lead, and they can't reverse that. They can remove those cells, and they can try to get those cells out of your body. But once you already have it in your body, it just keeps reproducing that broken cell build over and over and over again. And so this is why food, to me, I mean, I see this huge rage about vegan and not to eat meat and dairy because all those things are very toxic. And I completely agree, because some of the biggest dairy farms and egg farms are around Hanford and in nuclear.
I think also there's a huge conversation about the cruelty to the animals. In order to do mass farming, I mean, it is really the way the mass farming is done is so cruel.
Sure,
I think
I
that's
agree
a
with
huge
that as
portion
well.
To it all. So I think there's all of it. But I understand where you're saying is here's all these people are talking about eating right, and then you have this lead in your body, right?
Yeah.
Well, and also, but think about this. The beef probably, just like with the radioactivity, this is why beef and fish are really not to be advised to consume as little as possible, because they concentrate these elements in their bodies so much more. The density of those toxins.
That's where I want to take, I agree, Lonnie, but I want to take it a step further, where I think that it's not just the meat. Like, I believe it's the potatoes, seaweed, onions, apples.
Actually, you
wheat.
Know what? I'll share it with you. My daughter talked to me about a report that she read. She's an avid person. Evidently, what I've been doing is getting into her head, and she's been doing her own research. And you know what she discovered about seaweed? Seaweed is the only food that absorbs radiation, but it does not emit it. So if you eat seaweed, it will absorb radiation out of your blood, but it does not pass. It doesn't. If you can get it out of your body, it will leave. It takes it with it. It takes it with it. So it's the
only. I have read some interesting studies about algae and them using them for nukes to clean up waste. But I think that that's still the same thought, that it absorbs it and then it changes a chemical structure. I'm not convinced it. Away, Lonnie.
Mm, okay.
You know what I mean? I would like to believe that you could eat it and it absorbs it and then you can poop it out.
Well, we know, but this
but
is
then
the
your
point.
Poop still
everything
has
else,
it.
Everything else doesn't. Everything else doesn't. Everything else absorbs and can be absorbed. Certain foods are much more readily available to release the radioactivity into your body. There's certain things that is actually, you know, there's been a lot of studies on that. When Linus Pauling did studies on that, this is the thing. You're talking all these ages. This is the most astounding thing about when you're talking about this to me. 66, early 70s. They knew all about this. This was definitive information. John Goffman, in one of the studies, in one of the books I read, Population Control Through Nuclear Pollution, he wrote that book as a warning because he knew it would damage our children and damage our future. And he said one of the things definitively that disturbed him while he was working, because he was a nuclear scientist working for the industry and believed in it. He left believing in nuclear weapons, so as a good deterrent. So he wasn't a critic of it. But he said one of the congressmen came wild-eyed into his office and demanded that he change his report because they could just not tell people how damaging it was.
Right.
And he said, but no, so what they did was they cut it out. They redacted it.
Well, it's just that humans are collateral damage. It goes back to that slave mentality that people are going to die. And that's how people are going to get rich.
That's right. It's this attitude that we have to accept it and we don't. And honestly, this is the reason why I like, I don't know if you've heard about the Ubuntu movement. It's about building local community, people getting together and saying, you know what, we don't need your money. Money is actually worthless. Your fiat money means nothing to us anymore. We are doing these things to help our society. We're going to just do it anyways. You know what I mean? Like, see ya.
No, I think that's a huge factor. It's a huge factor, especially when it comes to honest science. That's why I wish I could find this guy's name of this scientist who was like the first to start the lying.
Okay, I've been doing a little bit of research, and I didn't want to interrupt you. Let's see, there's one on 1992, that's the House Intelligence Committee on Radioactivity and then Other Environmental Threats and the Arctic Resulting from Past Soviet Activities. Wow, that's not it, but that's a gem. Okay.
Right.
This one comes up with Claire Patterson.
Yeah, so Claire Patterson was the one who was studying the decay of uranium. And he didn't even care about nuclear science. His entire effort was just, all he wanted to do was to age the Earth. So that's his goal, his drive. But in his research, he saw that there was all this lead, this increase of lead being released into our atmosphere. And so that's when he started to see the correlation of using leaded gas.
He was assigned to the secret nuclear production facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee in 1944 in his mid-20s.
Yeah. And that's where he conducted the lead studies.
Wow.
And so, and this, Lonnie, I have to tell you, this makes me kind of cringe inside, because when I was little, my dad worked for Exxon Nuclear at Hanford, and my dad was a weapons designer. And they really had these, like, bring your kids to work day. And I have these memories of going to Hanford with my dad. And there was all these incubators, and I got to get on these, like, benches, you know, like a stool, and stick my hand in the rubber gloves and play with lead inside of these incubators. And my dad took a block and he engraved it with his name and my name and my mom's name. And I got to bring it home at the end of the day with my own personal piece of lead. And
wow.
I still have it.
Do you have it in a plastic bag at least?
No, when I Geiger it, nothing comes out of it at all. This is where that reality of that things aren't. So when we try to measure things with our Geiger counter, it only is measuring it in certain waves, and then it decomposes into other atoms, and eventually it becomes, quote unquote, not radioactive anymore.
Yes, but it's still toxic to the body if you touch it and stuff, right? If you
I don't handle this, though.
Yeah.
But my point is that this had to have been in the early 1980s.
Wow.
And so even then, this place was so poisonous and so dangerous, and yet they let people bring their children, and that had to have been some sort of, way to make the workers feel safe, is by downplaying the dangers. And then to have me go in and play with, radioactive waste.
I get this, but then this is their argument. How's your children? But this is the thing Dr. Caldicott tells us. It takes 4 to 8 generations for us to see the real damage that nuclear radioactivity causes.
Yeah,
so
I totally agree.
Scientifically, all the studies show that this is why they study butterflies and they study creatures that die quickly, because it takes really about 5 to 7. That's kind of the average, but 4 to 8, as she said, the range, like most of the biggest damage you'll see from the genetic mutation shows up in those. So our second, third generation people that we're having now, we don't really know. Like our grandchildren might show things, or theirs.
But that's just like in the non-severe cases, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, of course, there's severe cases of where people lose their babies before they're even born.
Yeah, that's true. Birth defects. That's true. Actually true. Miscarriage and sterility. There's a high level of sterility, though. That's one of the marked things that it does to children, especially boys, is cause sterility. They just can't have children.
But this is the answer from
the nuclear industry, though, Heidi. It's like, well, we know how to you're not going to be deprived of having a child, because there's plenty of babies in the world and we can, clone one anyways. So don't worry about it.
Well, that just goes to show their lack of appreciation or respect for life, human life. And that is what this whole system is on. This whole system is built on having slaves make cheap power for the rich and give them money.
I mean, our president said it. You don't want the poor people making decisions.
Yeah, because then they might.
He literally said that on a microphone.
Yeah.
Of course I have bankers. You don't want poor people in these positions, do you? Like, really? And people clapped. Yay, you're right.
Well, I definitely believe the nuclear cartel has had a lot to do with politics in the last 20 to 30 years.
Oh, you bet. They have owned it. I think we have had a silent military coup. And I think that's what the decision about us talking out about it is. You know what? Let's just get over it. We're not going to stop the police violence and the slave mentality until we say, you know what? We're not taking it anymore. Sorry. The battered wife syndrome is over.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where I get the most frustrated is just how people want to talk about their vacations and their new cars and their big houses and new, you know, everyone is so caught up in the material gain in life and keeping that.
On top none of us are, you know, really... what goes hand in hand with that? Name calling. Seriously.
Yeah.
Fascist, you know. I mean, you can, they're from all over, from both sides. That both sides have the name calling and it stops people from coming together. This is why I have a serious thing about
The name calling, Lonnie, is international and we use it in the form of racism, you know, and we use it about religion. It's just like us against them.
But it's for the same thing. It's for the slave mentality. It's to keep people from harmonizing and working together because humanity has a basic desire to live in peace. We're not the ones who build the bombs, you know, but actually we are the ones who build the bombs. We're the ones who go to work in their factories. Like your dad, he went to work there. He invented bombs thinking that he was being a good patriot. You know what I mean? That was his, contribution because he couldn't go to war and give up his body. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, this is the mentality they use on people. Well, you have to be willing to die. Well, for what? For us to go in and take everybody else's stuff? I mean,
well, my dad was a Marine, so he used to say the government owned his body. He truly believed that because he was a Marine, he was a piece of the government. And it was his duty to work at Hanford. But I'd also like to note that, you know, 10 years into his career there, he did lose his mind. He did go crazy. And it wasn't like in our society.
Do you think that was from the lead?
I do wonder about the mental health of Eastern Washington. And I think it's interesting there isn't studies on that. And then I think it's interesting on how others, you know, when you have mental health, they say it's genetics. Well, that's interesting because so is nuke damage is genetic. So why wouldn't it be affecting our brains and the chemistry of our brains? So I do put it to Hanford. I do put that there is just all kinds of loose elements and metals and things in the air and water there that people, I mean, this science is so new, Lonnie. I mean, science in itself is so new. And then to just have science as a framework for, say, you know, 500 years, and then for nukes to be discovered, nuke science is just like in its infancy right now. And sadly, we made a horrible mess. It's like an infant with diarrhea that has just pooped everywhere. And now we're busy trying to clean up the poop, but we're still making more babies. You know what I'm saying? Like, we kind of need to slow down on our science.
Donna Gilmore's coming on next week, and she made a comment that she said something. We don't need more. I said, well, we need nuclear scientists. And she's like, no, we don't. We need nuclear waste experts.
Right.
What we need is people to study the waste and figure out what to do with it, because that we desperately need. We're swimming in this stuff for real. She's right. Like, this is a big thing. Even this lead. Once people see, this is the first time I've heard that lead contamination was related to uranium. And yet the uranium market is taking off. They're guns blazing, man. They're making so much money right now. The uranium market, they are selling uranium like nobody's business. It's a hot
They're mining it around the whole world. I mean, I'd be willing to say that's why there's such an upset in the Middle East. Some of it's for oil, but some of it's for other mining things like uranium. They're in there getting as much uranium as they can.
Wow.
And then the other thing is when you open up the earth and start pulling uranium out, I mean, again, you're contaminating everyone who lives around that place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
well, I think it's what I call the one drop, you know, the one drop plutonium philosophy. Like, they know that there's already enough here to kill everybody. So why not do it? Why not go for the gold, get as much money as they possibly can, and screw anybody else? Like, they know that people have been, I mean, what obligation do the people who own all these operations have, or what sense, I mean, what's going to make them want to stop and say, oh yeah, we should clean this up. We need to help clean this up because we care about our children, because they're uranium miners. They obviously don't care about their children or their own lives. All of them, from the biggest slave to the lowest slave, all the way up to the very top of the food chain there. Anyone who volunteers to do that.
It's a campaign, though, Lonnie. It's this, like, it's a campaign that they've had since the 1940s telling you that it's safe and that it is okay. And
well, you know what they do? Is just
blame
like coal
other
ban.
Things.
You know, in coal ban, when they're mining coal ban, they have to have, like, people with guns looking over the miners because miners want to escape. It's the thing that's in all of our laptops, you know. I mean, it is really the whole thing, this murder, death, kill mentality of the slave mentality, with them having guns guarding over us. Like, they can just shoot and kill anybody they want, come and do whatever they... Who are these people? Like, these are human beings. They started out as human beings.
Right, but somehow they bought into the campaign, this nuclear industrial campaign, that they're better, they're smarter, they get paid more, you know, there's this mentality.
So you're talking
slavery.
About a eugenicist attitude of, like, they're smarter, so they deserve to be alive.
Yeah, I think you see that a lot with scientists in Hanford, that they're fine, they're safe, that they believe that... you know, all, you know, they would call me an alarmist and say, you know, oh, I'm the one that just is disillusioned, and that science is facts and it's proven that it's safe, and they go to work and they come home and everything's fine. And then some live to be 80, some at 50. I mean, that's the thing about atomic energy, is it's different rates and different spells. And then again, we're all have different genetics. So some people's genetics are strong, you know. But
yeah, but this
resistance.
Is the thing. This is what they don't. This is what they're not talking about, though, is exactly this. They're only talking about this generation. They're not talking about what the real, what they say. Oh, well, we know the real science. We're really real science says the worst damage is going to show up in 4 to 8 generations. That's what real science says. And real science says that your quality of life after being exposed to it 20 or 30 years diminishes tremendously, and maybe even sooner than that. And your children's quality of life goes down because they have sick parents and their finances get drained, and their pursuit to life, liberty, and the, you know, the our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is completely diminished through this entire uranium processing nuclear industry program. The right. Whole thing is just must end because it is damaging not just a few people. It's affecting the entire planet.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I think it has for 100 years. I mean, have you ever seen that it's like an animation, it's like a stop motion that a gentleman made of the bombs that have gone off from the beginning of time, you know?
Yeah,
the beginning of
there's a video that shows bing, 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 bing. It looks like
yeah,
For those of you that haven't seen it, there's a map of the world and the whole world, a flat map, and it looks like a fireworks thing. It looks like fireflies, bing, 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 for about like 10 minutes. That's how many bombs they dropped on our planet. Like,
and like 2,000, over 2,000.
It was World War III after World War II. It was a silent military coup that took over, because guess what? It's like, they've gone, oops, sorry, we didn't know we were going to cause mass death. Oops, too late. Because the seed has been planted right after World War II.
Yeah, I think that video stops in the mid-70s. So I'm curious as to how many happened after that. I had just watched that video.
It went really slow. It went slow from like the late 50s to the 60s. Yeah. And it does. There are, and but you know what? They're still doing it. I mean,
I did like the fact that it was showing like China, Russia. I mean, Russia went bomb crazy. France went bomb crazy. And it was so interesting, too, that when Russia tried. So it, when I watched this video, you see where the bombs are ignited. And first, they're all going off in Arizona and New Mexico. And then you see them in Japan. And you see them in the ocean. Then all of a sudden, you see France doing it in Africa. And so this really, and then Russia's doing it in Eastern Europe, in Eastern and Northern Eastern Europe. So you start to wonder, like, well, why are they bombing their, why are they testing where they even test? And look how many they've done. And so, again, look at how bad our atmosphere is. And we're still blaming cars. We're still blaming oil. And we're not even blaming, like, industrial pollution. To me, that should be the first culprit that we look at is industrial pollution. But if we start looking at industrial pollution, then we need to take a hard look at nukes. And they don't want us to look at that. So they would rather us worry about what we're eating and if we're smoking and, you know, if we walk or if we drive, you know, all of the world's problems seems like it's always pointed to the individual.
Blame the victim. That's what abusers do. Abusers blame the victim. That's the issue.
Yeah, so we have all of these people in the world blaming each other, dividing one another because of the, you know, daily rituals that we make. And none of us are looking at the industries. And that should be where we're at. Like, Washington State could shut down CGS easily. All they have to do is say no to it. It's only like 4% of the whole state's power coming out of CGS. A nuclear reactor that's operating on the river on Hanford's waste site. I mean, it's a crazy talk. How it, and the same reactor is the same one that was in Fukushima. It's the same GM, you know, manufactured reactor that's it's got the same faults as the one in Fukushima.
And do you know what? I printed out a story recently on June 20th, and it was the title of it. It was dated April 13th, 2017, Columbia Generating Station, NRC Special Inspection of Self-Inflicted Safety Wounds. Now, you're talking about how, now this is by the Union of Concerned Scientists. And it is so outrageous to read this story of the constant neglect of what they've been doing. There's diagrams. This is a great article, actually, to be honest. It's really worth going to look at. Because it shows how they have sort of done it into themselves, like why they did it. And it's that adds to the insanity. There's no regard to the Columbia River or to human life whatsoever among any of these nuclear people. When they say they have any regard for human life, they're just complete liars.
Oh, Lonnie, in July, in like the third weekend of July, every single year, they get hydroplanes to come and race on the Columbia River, like 10 miles downriver from the reactor. And thousands of people come and sit in the damn river watching the hydroplanes all weekend long. And nobody talks about where they're sitting.
Really?
There's no no, it's pictures of people in bikinis drinking Budweiser on the beach worrying about their sunburn.
How far from this place?
Well, it's in Kennewick. So if you were to look on a map and you see the Columbia River going through Kennewick, that's where the boat races are. And if you look on the map and you see where Richland is, that's after. Wow. So it's literally 10 miles. And people will fish. People eat the fish all the time out of the Columbia River. And that's, again, look at the decline of salmon that we're seeing. The Columbia River used to be stocked full with salmon, sturgeon. There used to be the 10 feet, 12 feet, 100-year-old sturgeon in the Columbia. And now you can't find sturgeon. And it's because they're bottom feeders. And so those sturgeons, where the radiation goes to the bottom. So that's one of the reasons why
there's such denial,
the
though, about it. There's such denial. It's stunning.
I just was thinking about, it's interesting, too, that radiation sinks to the bottom. Well, of course, if it turns to lead, then it makes sense that it would sink to the bottom. And so here we have all this silt and all of this dirt and lead at the bottom of the ocean and or of the river. So if they go to take out a dam, they're going to upset all of that waste. So it makes sense just to leave the dams and leave things alone. Unless there's an earthquake and the dam breaks, then they have problems.
Then we're super screwed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really.
It's a chain effect.
Because we're really, like, to be honest, there is a lot of earthquake anxiety here on the West Coast because there's a lot of activity at Yellowstone. We're having a huge tremors. We had that report done by the state of Washington that said we're overdue for a very large earthquake, 8.0 or greater, if not 9.0.
Right.
I mean, so.
Well, and then there's the scientist out of the University of Washington that showed that there's 14 fault lines going through the Hanford Reservation.
Was it 14? I thought it was 8.
It's newer, different depths and different informations. But my point is that when they buried those 60 tanks or 50 tanks in the ground, they had no idea they were setting them in an earthquake.
They just thought it was the desert. Area. They thought it was away from California's earthquake. I'm sure that was their thinking.
Yeah, I think that there wasn't in the 40s. In the 30s, there just wasn't an understanding about science like there is now. I mean, that's the part about nuclear science. Nuclear science is what taught us about atoms. I mean, before that, they didn't even believe in an atom. And
that's why John Gottman loved it. That's what he said, why he really was excited about it. But he vehemently disagreed with the use of nuclear science until we understood it. He said,
yeah, and we still don't understand it, though, Lonnie. We still, like, we're still trying to discover the quirks
in
and
that,
the inside works.
In that interview I read by Dr. John Goffman, the oral history of human testing, human radiation testing, he said until the 40s, they didn't even think about asking parents or people about testing them. They just took their kids, they took their babies and radiated them. The doctors would just say, okay, get this radiation. And it wasn't for the reason they came in for sickness. They wanted to see how it would affect their illness. They wanted to see if it might help. So they just treated everybody for lots of stuff.
Oh, I think that's gone on for years. I think that's what chemotherapy and radiation does to cancer victims now.
I agree.
It's unknown science that they're trying to.
Yeah, we're their little guinea pigs. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and irradiated food is very common. It's considered a preservative.
Right.
If you go to, like, Costco and shop at Costco, most of the fruits and vegetables will have a sticker on there saying that it's irradiated. Same with our milk. You know, that was considered a way of making food for people.
Sanitary. It's considered sanitary. It's totally insane. But what you're saying is that this ultimately breaks down into a level of lead in our food?
Yeah, it is.
Essentially,
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, that is, like, stunning. You're saying that so we're putting low level of lead in everything, essentially, by radiating it, because we're injecting it with a very low level of. Is that the natural, would a scientist say that that's not actually accurate?
So I wish I was more of a scientist, Lonnie, but if you were to take uranium and watch it decay, it turns into, like zirconium. And then from there it becomes like baconium, and then it's proconium. You know, there's these different names of that element.
Yeah.
And after the 13th element, it becomes lead. So if you were to eat it and it wasn't that element, it was thoronium or whatever, then that's what you're going to eat. So you see what I'm saying? That, to me, is the hardest thing about atomic energy, is that you think that this atom that's radioactive stays, but see, it doesn't. It attaches itself. This atom goes into a water molecule. then this water molecule evaporates and that atom then turns into an air molecule. And then it falls in the rain. You know, it's, so these atoms cling to other atoms and to other molecules, and they continually live or decay or evolve. And after they meet this half-life, they turn into the next thing. And then after that half-life, it turns into... So it's very... That's how science is leading us, is because they just keep changing the names, they keep changing the levels. And so for a normal person, you know, it's very easy for a scientist to say, oh, they did the green run in the 1950s where they sprayed radiation into the air and then they watched it from satellites to see where it goes. But it wasn't dangerous because that radiation was being active for 2 days and then it decayed. That's what I've been told my whole life about the green run. It was perfectly safe because those atoms were very short-lived radioactive atoms. But my coming from a farming background and growing up in a farmland, I'm thinking, okay, so if there's the spray that's released in a steam and it's traveling across the state, and then it falls to the ground, then that atom is going to be in the ground until we grow potatoes or onions or have beef or something there that eats it and takes it up and spreads it around. And the way that spreads it around is, let's say we plant potatoes there, and then I'm going to harvest my potatoes and I'm going to sell them to the grocery store, or say McDonald's, and then they're going to ship it to China or India or wherever else. And so that's how we've just spread this waste around at all of its different levels. Because,
well, listen to what the Royal Academy, the Royal Society of Chemistry says about uranium. I thought I'd open their page because I was looking for all the breakdown on the periodic table. And I thought I'd open their page. Listen to exactly what they say. This is the information they give us. This is almost criminal, in my view. Uranium, it doesn't give us the breakdown. It tells us a few, it goes down to uranium-235, and then it says, depleted uranium is uranium that has much less uranium-235 than natural uranium. It is considerably less radioactive than natural uranium. It is a dense metal that can be used for ballast for ships, counterweights for aircrafts. It can also be used in ammunition and armor. Uranium has no biological role. It is a toxic metal. This is so, like, I mean, lead. For them to say, to imply that depleted uranium is less harmful. This is the implication here. Depleted uranium is less harmful than, I mean, you can't have less harmful anything in uranium.
Well, the thing about, so with loose atoms, like the thing about radiation is you want atoms not loose. So you want them to bind with other molecules. So that's why like the vitrification project is such a big deal, because the vitrification project turns waste into glass. So it's a solid form. Depleted uranium essentially is lead. That's what that is. Huh. And so, of course, lead is very strong, and we've used it for bullets for hundreds and hundreds of years because it kills people, you know, and that's the same thing with this depleted uranium. It's less dangerous because it's more stable. It's more solid. It's not like a dust. It's not like a fluid. Like, you don't want radioactive waste in water. That's where it's not safe. That's the biggest mistake we've learned, is that for some reason that atom wants to go to water. It's going to hydrogen. So it searches for water. So when it's in the ground, it goes into the groundwater that goes to the river, that goes to the ocean, and then gets evaporated and gets waned. But we don't understand that process, and probably until the 80s, we didn't understand, you know what I mean? Like, that wasn't common knowledge, the life of water. That's a science that we had to come to understand before we could understand how these atoms travel through it.
And that's actually the harm that we're doing. Actually, this brings me up to something I definitely want to speak about, and that is, people really do need to contact their senators. and their House members and contact the House Committee on Energy and Commerce and tell them that they definitely do not want them to move out of the committee. They want them to kill the Nuclear Waste Amendments Act of 2017. Inside that bill, it sounds very innocuous, like it's not going. They're going to improve, right, the nuclear waste. No, what it does, it takes away local and city rights to water and utilities. And it removes the oversight to nuclear facilities by the NRC. It gives complete authority to the licensee, takes away for any, if they want to build a facility, they can build the facility and then do the environmental impact. I mean, it is completely insane. We have got to stop the bill. So people need to call up their personal congressman and look up the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And Blumenhauer, actually, of Oregon. I think that's his name, Blumenhauer of Oregon.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He's a congressman in Portland, East Oregon, I believe. He is a Republican, and he heads this committee. He's super pro-nuclear. He doesn't care. He's big, big money. But if you're in Oregon, but look it up, because there's people from Texas, all over the country on this committee, and we need people to call up and stop this bill. I mean, it is urgent, urgent, urgent. You can just Google it yourself. I'll put a link in the show, but people really need to call up because they plan on just privatizing all the nuclear waste and taking away all of the harm. Actually, you know where you can find really good information is on Donna Gilmore's page, SantaOnofreSafety.org.
Well, thank you, Lonnie.
On the front page. So this is how they do it. They sneak it through. We can thank Donna for this. It's called The Nuclear Draft for the Policy Amendment. She has there's a great summary. She took the time to read it. We were talking how they made it so complicated to read. They stuck in all these like insert section here, strike this section, insert this section. They made it really complicated so people can't just go to it and understand what it says. But this is what it says. We have about 2 minutes, so I'm just going to read this very quickly so you understand why it's important. Eliminate state and local control over water rights and other utility rights. Eliminate state and local oversight of facility. Eliminates for site-specific environmental impact reports. Eliminates requirements for monitored retrievable fuel storage for preventing radioactive leaks. Eliminates authorizations currently required by Congress and other checks and balances. Eliminates requirement to prioritize safety and environmental protection over cost and speed. Eliminates the requirements to consider transport issues before selecting a site. And then she has a note, some of these eliminations also apply to ISA Bill HR 474 Consolidated Interim Storage. So I encourage people, go to Donna's page. She has a link directly to this Energy and Commerce Committee. So you don't have to dig around. Go to her site. She has the information.
Well, I'm so grateful for her and grateful for you, Lonnie, and everyone who fights.
Well, I'm grateful for you. Thank you for this conversation. We have less than a minute left, and I just want to thank you, Heidi. I hope you'll join us again because this is very insightful.
I wish I knew more scientific terms and could be more scientific for everyone, but I do the best I can, and I wish that everyone else does the best they can, and don't let people tell you that you don't know what you're talking about or that you're stupid, because that's the first defense that they have against us.
We're not uneducated. We can educate ourselves about it, and you know what? We just need to put our courage feet on, assert ourselves, take action, and tell them no, we're not, the slave nation's over. It's time for us to change. Talk to you guys later. Put your courage feet on. Take action. Lean into democracy.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of Anti-Media Radio